Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Away for another Vaughan boundary.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tufnell. He often falls over and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Vaughney and Tuffers Cricket Club podcast brought to you by The Telegraph. Ben Wright here and I'll be joined by Michael Vaughan and Phil Tufnell as usual. Today we're going to start building up to England's final test of the summer against South Africa by speaking to Simon Harmer. A few years ago the Essex spinner was tipped to switch allegiances and potentially line up for England, but circumstances prevented him from doing so. Fast forward to today and he is one of the leading lights in county cricket and is in the best form of his career at the age of 33. He'll explain to us what inspired his current purple patch, how close he really was to representing England, and what he thinks of Bazball ahead of the Test series, which starts later this month. We'll also look back at the opening week of the 100. Phil has been busy immersing himself as the competition has been front and centre over the past 7 days. And we'll also have a few more free hits for Phil to deal with too. You should probably establish where everybody is, because Phil, you're not at home, are you?
No, I'm on a boat. I'm not a boat. You can't call it a boat. It's a ship. It's a big ship. And we left from La Rochelle, and now we've arrived this morning in Bilbao. So, yes, having a wonderful time.
Phil, can I? What are you doing on a ship?
I'm doing a few little chats later on. They've got a big theatre here,
Whoa. Wait a minute. So you're going against the podcast and doing your own show on a ship. Who are these people listening?
I don't know. There's about 5,000 people on this ship.
Is it, what? By definition, it's a captive audience, right?
Well, absolutely.
Unless they throw themselves overboard.
They've got to listen to me.
And is the format Q&A style, or is it you on your own just kind of giving it a little bit of stand-up?
No, I'm doing a little bit of both, So we've got someone who's going to be interviewing me, and then I'm going to be saying a few stories. I'm going to mention the pod as well.
Yeah. Well, very good, very nice. Enjoy. And what kind of crowd are we talking on the ship? Is it a young crowd?
It's a varied demographic, Mike.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But yes. All retired.
It's good fun. I recommend it. Listen, it's good fun. You can get a pizza 24 hours and a gin and tonic for 24 hours.
I just thought we'd sort of follow Phil's life as he globetrots around the world. Giving chats, drinking G&Ts. No, we should probably talk about a bit of cricket, shouldn't we?
Yes.
And the 100 has kicked off, and you've been covering that, Phil. So, you were up at Trent Bridge, weren't you, for the opening night?
Yes, for the Trent Rockets. It hasn't quite kicked off for me, to be honest.
What, the whole tournament?
Yeah, the whole tournament. It just hasn't quite got going. It needs a couple of good games. It needs a couple of really, really tight games, even though there has been, to be fair. The one against the Oval Invincibles was a good game at the Oval, which was lively, and the Northern Superchargers and the Originals as well was quite close. But I don't
know. Oh, is that that?
Yeah, well, yes, you were, Mike.
I was at Old Trafford on Friday night with my kids and a few mates having a few pots. Look, I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the cricket. Seen Dre Russ whack a few sixes. Harry Brooks showing a bit of skill. I enjoyed the cricket. I have to say, now sitting in the crowd as a fan, particularly with my young kids, they're disappointed about the music.
Really?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I waxed lyrical last year about Sweet Caroline and the crowd gets going. Lionesses had Sweet Caroline, yet the 100 doesn't have Sweet Caroline. What the kids want, they're in the party stand crying out. The DJ was excellent, played a few songs. I've got no idea what it is, but it seems to be okay. They need some sing-along songs for the crowd.
Yes, I think.
They need sing-along songs. And it's not raucous, and it's not the football crowd. It's Sweet Caroline, and I'll keep saying it, get Sweet Caroline played at the 100. And I'm with Phil. It's not quite kicked off, and I'm blaming the fact that they haven't had Sweet Caroline.
Yes, we need some sing-along tunes. Perhaps that's right, Mike, as you say.
It does.
And do you think that's why they're not playing it? Because they're worried it'll be a bit too football crowdy and a bit too raucous? Because obviously they've got the family stands now where they don't serve the alcohol, and they're desperately trying to ensure that they don't have that kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere at all the grounds has been great. They've all been sellouts. There's been families and kids and what have you are all there enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
But then you're right, Mike. I think they need something to latch on to.
My daughter is 12, and she's not obsessed with the game. She likes the razzmatazz. She likes the noise. She likes the ball flying into the stands. She thinks it's funny. She enjoys watching the stands and seeing the beer snake. She thinks that's hilarious as well. And she's disappointed that she couldn't sing Sweet Caroline. That's from a 12-year-old. It's not from my 18-year-old. It's not from me. That was from my 12-year-old. So I do think they're missing a trick. I get that what they're trying to do is not create that kind of T20 Friday night vibe where there's beer thrown all over the place at some venues. But Sweet Caroline is not a raucous song. It's a song that gets everyone going. It's pretty much played across all sports. That is the reason why the 100's not got going this year. The other reason is this. The 100 has started right at the heart of the Commonwealth Games and right at the start of the Premier League season. It's the hotbed. As soon as the Premier League football starts, no one gives two hoots about anything else for about a week or 10 days because everyone's getting sacked or everyone's the greatest manager or greatest player in the world within a game. That's what happens with the Premier League. I'm just kind of looking. Could cricket for the 100, because they want it to be this prominent tournament, rather than always say, oh, it has to be in the school summer holidays, don't they want to choose the window when the Premier League finishes and there's about 3 or 4 weeks where there's not a great deal of football?
Yeah.
And then it would be the prominent kind of sporting event of the summer. It hasn't got going. There hasn't been many great games yet, but it's early stages. There's some wonderful players. I guess Ben Stokes, Johnny Bairstow pulling out. You know, that's a big, big hit on the 100. You know, two superstars. But I like the fact that they're using this window to prepare for the Test series. You only have to look at a year, two, three, 4 years down, in the last 3 or 4 years. It's all been pretty much about the white ball game, which is interesting. It's kind of all been reversed. It's all about Test cricket and trying to make sure England continue with what they've started this summer in the Test game. And those players need a break, need a breather. And they've decided that these last couple of weeks has been the time to rest and get ready for that Test series.
You're talking about that overlap with the Premier League. Did you see Harry Kane at Lords having a six hitting competition? It looks like he's got a good eye for the ball.
He can play, Harry. he can play the boy. He can play. I missed it. I must have hit. Did he hit any? Did he get some six?
Yeah, he got hold of a couple.
Good lad.
Were you in the middle of one of your ship theatre events while Harry was trying to whack it down St John's Wood High Street?
They haven't got Sky Television. They have, but I haven't worked it out yet.
I mean, some of the actual games, as you say, there haven't been any standout ones. Other than London Spirit, I thought beating the Oval Invincibles, but they were by 3 runs on Thursday.
Yes,
that's probably the pick of the matches so far.
Yeah, that was a good game. Good to see the London Spirit. You say it's good to see some of the overseas players coming back in as well, isn't it? Obviously, last year couldn't make it through COVID and what have you. So the drain.
Yeah.
You know, the Dre Russies, Adam Zampas over here, Stoinis, who I just like saying Stoinis. I don't know why. Reminds me of sort of New York, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Marcus Stoinis.
So it's nice to see these fellas over here. But I'm not quite sure what it is. You know, I mean, there has been some close games. But yeah, I'm with Mike. I'm putting it down to Sweet Caroline.
The London Spirit, who were poor last year, they just didn't quite get it going. Don't rule them out. I know they've had a really good start, but Owen Morgan, Trevor Bayliss, that combination is back. The legacy of Shane Warne. They had a 23-second applause last night at Lords. I know his son Jackson was there in the crowd.
Lovely.
Nice.
So that was a special moment. And as we saw with Rajasthan Royals this year, reaching the IPL final, you know, don't rule out London Spirit going all the way this year. I mean, the Southern Brave look the team again. They've just got everything. They've got so much quality, so much experience. James Vince, in the form of his life. All the talk, Jason Roy and his position.
Yeah.
I stick with him, and I still stand by what I've said recently, that you've got to give that player more opportunities. He plays such a high-risk game, and once he clicks, he'll be fine, and I'm sure he'll get back. But if England do start to think, oh, do we change Jason Roy? I mean, all the talk would be Phil Salt. I would just throw a name out there to bring him back, and that would be James Vince.
Yeah, I would.
James Vince is playing that well. And also, Phil, I know he's a bit kind of towards the back end of his career, but Jack Crawley struggles in the first two test matches against South Africa. With the style of cricket England are trying to play,
yeah,
is it worth having a look at James Vince at the top of the order in test cricket if they're looking at changing the top of the order in the longer format? You know, we'll have to wait and see how Zach goes, but he's playing as well as I've ever seen him play. Yeah. So he must be mentioned in all formats of the game.
On him playing for the T20, he's obviously got that captaincy experience as well. Do you think that would be a help or a hindrance to Butler if he was included in the team?
I think that just at the moment, James Vince, as Mike was saying, is in the form of his life, as you say, not only with the bat hand, but also the way he's marshalling the troops as well. He's obviously matured as a cricketer. You know, he's won all the competitions at the moment. He's got them all under his belt. He seems to be, you know, leading from the front. He's got everyone facing the right way on the bus, so to speak. And
he must have been on those fancy buses that have like microwaves on and stuff and toilets.
Yes, tour bus, Mike. We was on the tour bus. No, listen, I think James Vince, I was there actually when he got 80 at Brisbane. And I
run out.
And he got run out by the GOAT, extra cover on 80. And I just feel that if he hadn't have done that and had gone on to get 100, we might be talking about James Vince as a test player. So,
you know, his last test score is over 70.
I can see him being the first off the rank, so to speak, if they are looking for a replacement for anyone in that team.
How about Will Jacks as well? I thought he was probably, of the first few games, one of the standout performances. Got 81 off 45 in the Invincibles win against Welsh Fire on Sunday.
Gives it a whack.
Yeah.
He's a free spirit. He got that ridiculous score in a T10 game, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Over in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, or it might have been Sharjah. But again, Surrey have got a nucleus of players that are, you know, are very, very promising. You know, you look at, you know, what they've produced in terms of the Curran brothers. Ollie Pope's a real talent. Will Jackson. I know Alex Stewart has spoken very highly of him for many, many years. So. He's coming up the ranks. He's coming up the ranks, and I don't think he'd let England down if they picked him. You know, I think he's that kind of player that he seems to have that vibe and that buzz and that mentality that I don't think the big stage will scare him. He'll almost enjoy that kind of feeling of being looked at more, more prominence in terms of media profile. He looks that kind of player. So, yep, he's not too far away.
Yeah. So who are we early stages, but who are we favouring at this stage? Brave. Invincibles, and with Spirit as an outside chance?
No, I'm going to stick my neck out and go for Northern Superchargers.
Really?
Show your workings. Explain yourself.
Well, no, I just saw them play the other day against the Invincibles. They knocked off about 160, didn't they? 165 or something like that. They're a little bit of a wild card. You're right. The Brave, very, very strong. But just as a little bit of a wild card, I'm going to throw in the Superchargers.
shame about the women's cricket team in the Commonwealth.
Oh yeah, wheels came off a little bit there. Should have won it.
Doing so well in the group stages.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't see that happening if. No disrespect, but I couldn't see that happening if Heather Knight was captain. I think that was a huge loss for the England side, like a women's side. They got themselves into another really great position, didn't they? And they just fell away. What did they need? They needed about 40 off of 30 balls or something with wickets. Yeah. And then listen, fair play to India. You know, they played extremely well, but I just feel that if Heather had been there, they might have just got across the line.
Yeah, without any question, you lose a player, never mind a captain like Heather. It's a huge loss. You know, they're a young team. They've gone with a younger set of players, trying to play more dynamic. It's not worked at the first time of asking, but, you know, they've got to continue to play in that fashion. For the women's game, I don't think it's a bad thing for India to make the final.
No.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, I was thinking, oh, go on, India, go and win it.
Yeah.
Go on and win it, but they come up against the juggernaut of Australia and they're near on impossible to beat. But for the women's game, having India in a final, you know, and I'm sure they're getting close to having a women's IPL fully. If India would have won it, oh, that'd have been a massive tick. Yep, let's get it going, rock and rolling quickly. You only have to go back many, many years ago when the first T20 World Cup. Remember, India weren't interested in T20 cricket.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they won it. It's like, oh, it's the best game in the world. We'll create our own league. And look what's happened. So I mean, England will be disappointed and they'll be really disappointed not to go all the way in their own backyard. I mean, seeing the Lionesses and what they've achieved and the kind of exposure that's brought onto the football game. So they'll be disappointed. But for the women's game, I don't think it's a bad thing that India made the final.
Yeah, fair enough. And it worked within the bigger games, didn't it? So, I mean, if the powers that be are looking at including cricket in the Olympic Games, I think 2028, they're thinking about it.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good testbed for it. If they are included, we should go and do the podcast.
We are deciding upon whether cricket should be in the Olympics purely on the venue. And Ben, where is it?
Los Angeles.
Yes! Yes!
Let's go watch some cricket in LA.
Lovely.
Yes, I think it's very, very important for the game when it's in the Olympic in LA.
We could do a couple of pods from LA. That sounds good.
You could go on your ship there.
Oh, sail there.
Across.
Would you have liked an Olympic medal for playing cricket?
I would, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, too. I just don't think, I'm not sure whether the 2020 format would work for men's cricket in the Olympics. I'd go T10.
Right, we're delighted to welcome Simon Harmer, the Essex and South Africa spin bowler, on the pod. Simon, thank you for joining us. You were recalled to the South African squad for the tour of New Zealand at the start of this year. Before that, your last test was in 2015, I think. I'm right in saying 33. Had you given up hope of an international recall?
Thanks for having me, firstly. It's been a crazy journey so far. I don't think I'd ever given up hope. I think I'm a pretty optimistic person, and I knew that the currency was wickets. So if I kept on doing as well as I was at Essex, and I wasn't selected, then so be it. But I just wanted to make sure that I was doing as well as I possibly could. And I thought somewhere along the line, there's surely got to be an opportunity.
Simon, great to have you on the pod. I say this to all our guests, you'll get a cap. We've got some very fancy caps and you'll receive one of those. In that period between 2015 and I guess a few months ago, how many phone calls did you receive from the ECB regarding your potential chance of putting the three Lions on?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to answer that question. No, I'm joking. No, there was a lot of hype in the media. As you know, the English media kind of write what they want to. And I'm a South African passport holder. So the actual possibility of me getting a passport and playing for England was non-existent. But because I was in the county system, because I was a coal pack player, there was a lot of talk that all of a sudden I could now become sort of eligible for England. But the reality was that I'm still on a South African passport, and the sort of potential playing for England was never going to be around.
Did you never go to bed at night dreaming of putting three lines on your your hat and on your chest?
You must have done.
You know, you play with Cookie at Essex. Surely you can see what you know. The Knight of the Helm, Alistair Cook, thinks of the three lines.
Can you imagine the hornet's nest that would have been stirred up if I had been selected for England and played? Kevin Peterson the second, it would have been absolute carnage.
Simon, what do you put your sort of success down at Essex and these masses of wickets you've been taking and anything sort of specific that you've changed or anything?
I wouldn't say I've changed a lot. I think when I fell out of favour with the national team, I decided that I've got kind of two options here. I'm either going to look back at my career and be bitter and be the guy that played five test matches, which is kind of what I never wanted to do. Or I could try and sort of leave no stone unturned, give it my best shot. And if it never happened again, then so be it. But I could sort of sleep at night knowing that I tried my best. So when I got dropped in 2015, I got hold of one of my mates. I got hold of a spin bowling coach in India. And I did a lot of work with them. And I'd fallen out of love with cricket. I think the sort of highlight of your career is sort of phoning your parents and telling them that you've been selected to play for South Africa and your dream of playing for your country had sort of come into fruition. And I think the lowest point in your career is phoning your parents and telling them the exact opposite, that you'd been dropped. So I wasn't in a great place with my cricket and there was the opportunity for me to come over and play county cricket. And it's something that I'd always wanted to do. I was only playing one format in South Africa. And so the sort of the lure of being able to play all three formats was sort of why I wanted to come and play in county cricket. And I think Essex gave me the platform to sort of fall in love with cricket again, the platform to play all three formats, the opportunity to do that. And also, I felt incredibly backed in the county system. Chris Silverwood was the coach at the time, Anthony McGrath, the assistant coach. And in South Africa, when you play a game and you don't do well domestically, you're almost looking over your shoulder immediately thinking, well, it's a matter of time before I get dropped. Where I just felt in the UK, it didn't matter how you did. They kind of understood who you were as a cricketer and what sort of talent you possessed. And even if you did go through a lean patch of form, they always backed you and they gave you that belief that you were good enough and that sort of a performance was just around the corner. And I think that coupled with becoming a match winner for Essex and being comfortable with that role, I think has given me a lot of confidence and the belief that I am good enough to play professional cricket, where I think in 2015 there was a lot of questions in my own head whether I was still good enough.
And Simon, you mentioned an Indian spin coach. Can I ask who that person was and what did he teach you to become the bowler that you've become?
So we went on a whole bunch of spin bowling camps with Cricket South Africa and I met Umesh Patwal along the way. And it was, you go on these spin camps and there's like eight batters and eight bowlers and you only have like a very small amount of time. So I went over to India for 10 days and basically it became sort of aware to me pretty quickly that whatever I thought I knew about spin bowling was absolute rubbish. the way I gripped the ball, the sort of biomechanics of what I thought was important, he basically laughed at. And he's the type of guy that answers a question with a question. So it was quite frustrating in the beginning. He didn't just spoon feed me all the stuff that I needed. He wanted me to understand. And after about 5 or 6 days, there was like a watershed moment where everything came together. But he basically broke apart everything that I thought I knew about spin bowling and made me sort of re-understand what was important and what I needed to be successful.
So it wasn't just about the actual sort of mental side of bowling spin. It was going back to the basics a bit about grip, about action and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it was. It was the way that I gripped the ball. I never used to have my thumb on the ball, where he sort of explained that the more surface area that you have on a cricket ball, the more revolutions that you can get versus just having your index finger and middle finger as an off spinner. So I used to sort of leave the thumb off the ball, whereas now I have the thumb on the ball. Little things like head position in your action, just like the biomechanics of how your left arm works, different variations, how like subtle changes that you can get different results. And I think that's the biggest thing. As an orthodox off spinner, you need to be able to bowl the same ball with the same action, but have different results in terms of pace, in terms of revs on the ball. It turned out to be.
Did that surprise you?
I think it was incredibly frustrating because here's a guy who's like, I've played international cricket. I thought I knew a little bit about spin bowling. And this guy's just laughed at me. And I was like on the verge of tears because now I have to relearn my skill. But in hindsight, it was probably the best thing that I've ever done for my cricket.
And Sam, was he an outstanding spin bowler himself?
No, I don't think he's ever played professional cricket or first-class cricket. Wow. And most of the...
What's his name again? I'm writing him down.
It was, I don't know. I guess that's just kind of how life works out. You meet people along the way. And I think he's done a lot of batting stuff with Nepal and Afghanistan. But, I found the value with my spin bowling and on the spin bowling camps.
You just mentioned batters. I mean, I don't think Phil will mind me saying that back in the day, he probably bowled some great players, but not as many players with so many tricks now. They all seem to play the reverses, the flicks, but you name it, they've got every shot. Have you noticed over the last 7 years how different batters are facing spin, particularly in the county game?
Absolutely. I think especially in red ball cricket, batters aren't sort of scared to reverse sweep you or use the reverse sweep as an option to lap sweep you. I think the array of shots that have come into the game over the last 7 years or while I've been at Essex, I think it's quite evident that the white ball cricket and that mentality is bleeding into first-class cricket.
Mm.
And has that changed how you bowl?
I don't know if it's changed the way that I bowl, but I think you need to be aware of what a batter's trying to do. So in white ball cricket, I might try and bowl a Yorker very early on in my spell to let the batter know that if he is going to look to play a sweep or reverse sweep, that I do have the Yorker rather than being sort of reactive and waiting for him to play that shot first. I think it's just, you know, it's about being a bit smarter in how you go about your business. The same as in red ball cricket, if there's foot marks that you're bowling into outside of stump, and if you look at how Joe Root's been playing it, as soon as you look to expose those foot marks, he's going to reverse sweep you. So you need to try and put something into his mind to let him know that if he's going to try and reverse sweep every ball, that you've got something versus, being sort of reactive to that.
Yeah, Simon, also, do you think there's still room for a bit of flight and guile in spin bowling? It's not all about just jamming it into the pitch nowadays, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I still, in terms of spin bowlers, I think I'm on the slower side of the spectrum. And I think that allows me to get the drop on the ball, which I think is probably an off spinner's biggest asset, is if you can make the batter think that the ball's going to be landing 2 meters from the crease and it ends up landing 2.5 meters from the crease. That's the difference once he's committed to playing a drive and it's not quite there. So I think the faster you bowl, the more difficult it is to get that sort of drop on the ball. So I'm a massive advocate for a bit of flight and guile, as you put it.
Bags and gin, I used to call it.
What is it? Fags and gin?
F and G, mate. F and G, bit of flight and guile.
So England, playing England in a test series, Bazball, the well-documented new style of the England test match team. What have you made of it and what are you going to try and do to stop it?
Oh,
well, I think if you look at where the England test team was after the Ashes and the repercussion of them losing and they got absolutely obliterated in the media, and then all of a sudden it was the county game and there's everything wrong with the county game. and it's the Duke's ball and we should be playing with the Kookaburra ball. And now that's all kind of been forgotten because they're playing this aggressive, attractive brand of cricket and they're chasing down 280, 300 in the fourth innings on day five. And if that's not good for the game, then I don't know what is. And, you know, I think after that Ashes series, England needed an identity. And as Brendan McCullum did with New Zealand when they were kind of floating along, he gave them that identity and sort of passed it on to Kane Williamson. I think he's come into that England dressing room and he's given the guys the belief. Look at how Joe Root is playing, the weight of the captaincy that was taken off his shoulders to now have the backing of the coach and just knowing that he can go out there and express himself. I mean, that innings that he played at Trent Bridge was, you know, it was ridiculous batting, some of the shots that he was playing and how he was expressing himself. And surely, as a batsman, that's where you want to be. You want to be able to go out there and express yourself and play without fear. When Australia were at their best with Matt Hayden and that era, that's what they were doing. They were playing fearless cricket. There was no fear of failure. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is, as a professional cricketer, is being at the crease and knowing that whether you fail or not, it doesn't matter. But if you've got in the back of your mind, oh, I can't get out now, you know, and you're striking at 25 and then you do get out, you sit back down in the change and be like, I should have just taken it on. So, yeah, I think the baseball thing is going to create its own challenges. But, I mean, for a spin bowler, if guys are looking to take me on, there's always going to be opportunities. So I think it's going to be a good challenge.
And Simon, you've been in and around the county dressing rooms the last few weeks when obviously Ben Stokes came out as the England captain and he sent the message, the style of players that we want are aggressive players. Have you noticed the conversations around the dressing room have been about what Ben has said? And for those players that are around your team who have got aspirations of getting into the England side, have you noticed that they're changing anything to try and get into that brand of cricket?
Look, there have been conversations that I've been a part of, but if you look at Chelmsford and how the wicket plays at Chelmsford, if you walk out there and try and play baseball at Chelmsford, I think you're going to come short very quickly. Whereas guys playing at the Oval or maybe Lords, it's a lot easier to play that brand of cricket. So I think you still need to be smart in the way that you go about it. You can't play this ultra aggressive brand of cricket in India on day three when it's absolutely ragging. But if the wicket is good, then why can't you chase down sort of 280 on the last day? But yeah, I think, I mean, for us at Essex, there haven't been too many chats about trying out and trying to be ultra aggressive.
You got career best figures of 15 for 207 in your win against Hampshire last month. And then you followed that up with 13 for 156 against Gloucestershire in your very next match, I think. Do you feel like you're in the form of your life at the moment? And do you think you'll be able to take that on when you take on England?
I think if I was scoring that many runs in terms of the 200 and the 150, then maybe. But I think the biggest thing was at the start of the season, the wickets were flat and pretty docile. And I mean, I didn't pick up a hell of a lot of wickets with sort of the understanding that sometime along the course of the season, there's going to be a wicket that's going to turn and that I would need to cash in. So I think the wickets have come at the right time. I wouldn't say that I'm in the form of my life. I think I've been bowling really nicely over the last few years and I'm very happy with where my game's at. But, you know, like ultimately it's going to count when I get the opportunity or if I get the opportunity in the test series and how I do that, because there's a lot of talk of how I've done in county cricket and in the county game, but I've always wanted to compete on the international stage and that's where it's going to count. So I think I just need to kind of keep moving forward and make sure that I'm progressing and that when that opportunity does present itself, that I'm ready for it and that I grab it. And maybe that's what I didn't do in 2015.
You've talked in the past about how there was sort of bad blood towards Kolpak players in South Africa. Can you explain why there was that antipathy and what's changed?
Well, I think there was, in my scenario, as I said earlier, it was about opportunity for me. It wasn't about money. I signed a very small contract for Essex when I first came over. But there were players in the South African system that had been backed by the national coaches that were sort of not under threat, but decided to pursue the Kolpak route and and perhaps the security of being able to play county cricket. And so it was kind of a one-size-fits-all. And because I was a Colpack player, I was painted with the same brush. And I think, you know, the public's perception is based on what people write in the press. And there was a lot of negative media towards the guys that were playing for South Africa that then signed Colpack deals. And so everybody then gets all the social media crusaders, get onto Twitter and whatever platform they want. And, you know, they pick everybody apart. And now everybody's turned their back on the country. And we were the black sheep. Cricket South Africa stopped us from going back and playing in South Africa. But at the end of the day, I knew why I did it. I felt like I did it the right way. I sat down with Russell Domingo, who was coach at the time, and said, "This is where I'm at. What are your thoughts?" And he said, "There's absolutely no reason why you can't do it for 2 or 3 years and then come back into the system." So, you know, like, I can sleep easy knowing that I had the right intentions, and it was always about opportunity for me.
Sam, you mentioned earlier about on the back of losing in Australia, we always rip up English cricket. As you mentioned, different ball, county structure, there's a high performance review. What is your blueprint and what would it look like, the county game going forward?
I've always been a big advocate for a two-divisional structure. I think you need to be playing more than 10 games of first-class cricket a season. I think if you're playing 10 or less with 18 counties, I don't think it's a good thing. I do think that there's certain counties that don't really put as much time and effort into red ball cricket and are more than happy to just focus on white ball cricket. So a three-divisional structure could work because it could then allow those counties to play against one another. And if they don't want to focus on their red ball cricket, then so be it. But I think you want to be playing strength v strength. And a two-divisional structure, there's always going to be teams competing to be promoted. And likewise, teams don't want to be relegated into the second division. And I think if you look at it, at the start of a season, any one of the sort of teams in the first division can go on and win it. So I think as long as you're playing sort of 12 to 14 first class games a year, it's going to work. But I've always been a fan of the two divisional structure.
Simon, a lot's made about us spin bowlers and the relationship with the captain and about field settings and what have you. I think actually sort of Joe Root has been criticised about that a little bit. How do you go about it? Do you just go out there and say, "Listen, leave it to me," or is there always a sort of a bit of a chit-chatter going on with the skipper?
Yeah, I think different captains manage it differently. Some captains want to be involved and they want to be the actual person moving the field and almost get offended to a certain extent if you move a fielder without consulting them, which I don't think is a very healthy relationship for a spin bowler. I think as a captain, you want to give your bowler the freedom to do what he thinks is right. And if he's not getting it right, then to start a discussion and be like, "Okay, well, why don't we change this?" Or so I think through my career, I've had a bit of both sides. But I think as a bowler, I know what I'm trying to do. I know where I'm trying to get the batter to play and what fielders I need in certain positions. But I think there is certain times during a spell where you get a little bit boxed in and you can't sort of take a step back and look in. And that's where you need a bit of an outsider's perspective, so to speak, whether that be the captain, or I speak a lot to Alistair Cook at first slip because he's standing at slip for me. So he can see the pace I'm bowling, what the batter's looking to do. And so is the keeper. So there's a lot of discussions that happen at slip when I'm not bowling, to sort of get a bit of feedback of what they think, because they've got as good a view as I do. And obviously, Sir Alistair's got a sort of a batter's brain as well and thinking what the batters are trying to do.
Yeah. And how many times does it take for you to be hit over mid on to drop one back?
Well, that's the thing. Like, batters think that running down the wicket and pongoing you into the river here in Chelmsford is going to get the man back. But if you're blocking the rest of the over and just taking one risk and over, I'm happy with that. If a guy's got a game plan against that, then I think that's when the field probably needs to be manipulated. So I'm more than happy to go for runs if it's block or just hit.
Simon, you come into the most important part of the interview. I don't know if you've listened to any of the podcasts, but the Professor Phil Tufnell asks you either or. You can only answer one. Phil, over to you.
Okay, going to have quite a simple starter for you here, Simon. Boerewors or bangers?
Boerewors.
Boerewors, okay. St George's Park or Chelmsford?
Chelmsford.
Oh, okay. Watching rugby or watching cricket?
Watching rugby.
Watching rugby.
What's your team?
I support the Sharks and then obviously the mighty Springboks.
Union, not league.
Yeah, Union all the way.
You've got three answers to this one. Just mixed it up a little bit here, okay? Three. You might be playing at these grounds this summer. Which one do you fancy? Old Trafford, the Oval or Lords?
It's been a childhood dream, so definitely Lords.
Yeah, it's lovely. Okay, now, and last one. Okay, hitting that four runs off the last bowl to win the T20 title at Edgbaston 2019 or any of the other wickets you've taken in your career?
Hitting the winning runs at Edgbaston in 2019.
Yeah, and then you went jog, didn't you? You was just as well they closed the gate, otherwise you would have run out of it.
I thought I was going to take off.
Thank you very much, Simon. That was brilliant.
No dramas.
We'll see you at the test venues. Good luck.
Yeah, look forward to it. And maybe we can have a fag and a gin at some stage.
He sounded like he was never even close to playing for England.
No.
Didn't even consider it.
No.
And then this Indian spin guru who seems to have never played the game. but knows everything about it and completely reworked his action and turned him into the best spinner in the county game.
It completely dismantled his action, his grip. I mean, that is a huge thing for a cricketer. You know, it's reworking your bat swing, your stance, everything. It's the same with a bowler. I mean, it sounds amazing. And the chap has never, ever played the game. You know, he was just wandering about. I would come over here. I think he's going to do well against England. I've got a feeling it's been a long, hot summer.
Yes.
The pitches are going to be dry. They're going to take a bit of turn. And I think he's going to do pretty well. He's an excellent spin bowler. Very, very good at county level. And I think he would have just learned and matured and got himself ready for this series. It's sort of in his own backyard, really.
Bouldered a lot of these boys before, hasn't he?
Yeah, what I liked about him, you've always talked to me about, you know, it landing it in the fruit bowl.
Yes.
You know, you've got to land the ball in the same area, but it's got to arrive as a different fruit.
If you bowl a banana, it's got to arrive as an orange.
The cross between cricket and Fruit Ninja.
You know, the banana is the shape ball, and then the orange is just the orthodox ball, and then the pear's that one that just does something a little bit different, but they've all got to land in a similar kind of area. I like what he said about, I try and throw in the Yorker early.
Yeah.
To get on fast and full, just to get it into the batter's mind about the sweep shot. I think that's... He's given the game away a bit early.
I used to bowl him a little finger ball early on, just toes, just
banana.
Yeah, and used to bowl him but that started a banana and then ended a banana because you always used to bowl him a couple of little arm balls, first two or three overs, just to say you just can't keep sweeping me, mate. It puts him in the mind. It puts it in the mind. I think he spoke very well about it. He obviously thinks a lot about it. I think he's going to be dangerous for this England side.
And I tell you what, when we laugh about the coach having not played the game, I honestly think that is a great lesson to a lot of coaches. Actually, you don't necessarily have to have been a great player or even an incredible a county player. You can study the game and be a student of cricket and be just as good in terms of information that you pass on to players.
Yeah.
you know, the biomechanics. Again, similar to Ravi Ashwin, who talks about, you know, he said about, you know, it winds up when you just talk about wrist spinners. Well, you need your wrist when you're bowling orthodox, off spin. You've got to really use your wrist to get so many more revolutions. And Simon Harmer, his action, if you watch him bowl, he doesn't look like he's doing much, but he gets them down there with a lot of revolutions on the ball. Great shape, great dip. He gets overspin. He gets a lot of dip. So, yeah, I think you're right, Phil. I think it'd be intriguing because England will attack him. They'll sweep him. Sweeping, dance down, try and whack him. I think it could be intriguing because he's got the nous. He's got the kind of, you got to remember Ashwin didn't play against England at Edgbaston. That was a big trick miss. With Ashwin, I reckon that game might have been a different kind of story. Palmer's that kind of bowler that he'll subtly just change flight. And he won't mind being hit. You know, he won't think, oh, God, I'm going to lose my rag because I'm being hit. He'll know that England will try and hit him. He will get hit at times, but I think he's got the experience and the subtleness of variation to cause a lot of problems.
He's probably the last of the sort of real flight and guile spinners, you know. And which is lovely to see. I'm looking forward to it.
But he's a big guy as well, doesn't he? So it comes from a height. He's got these massive hands, so that must be...
Yeah, but he's got the tricks. He's got the changes of pace. He's got the changes of flight. He's pulled back. Around the crease and everything. He's a bit of an old school spin bowler, really. But as you say, has got it a little bit upstairs as well. He knows that they're going to come from. We're also talking to him about, you know, when do you say to the captain, you know, he keeps hitting me over the top, let's put one back. So I think that he's at the top of his game at the moment, confidence wise, you know, ability wise as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how he goes to this against this attacking England side.
Yeah, and how important is it for England to get some good results against South Africa? We had this fantastic start to the season, Bazball, a little bit of a slump as we've gone through the White Ball series. Got to end the season on a high going into the T20, even though it's Red Bull cricket now.
I'm looking forward to the Test matches coming back. I want to see some Test match cricket. What a shout out that is.
Yeah, I reckon it's an incredible turnaround that, you know, for the last few years, we've almost been dreading the test being on because we've kind of gone, oh, no, we kind of know what's going to happen and the batters will collapse. You know, we don't really have enough in terms of the bowling department at the minute because there's so many injuries to kind of blow the opposition away. Can't wait for the 50 overs in the 2020 because we know we're going to launch it out of the ground. Well, how times change. As we've always said, English cricket can't get all formats right at the same time. At the minute, we all want to see the test team because they're playing a very expansive game. Will they have that bump in the road? Of course, they're going to have it at some stage. It may come over the next few weeks against South Africa. South Africa, I think, are the team to watch. If you think about what they've done in the last couple of years, you see what they did in the White Ball game. I think they're starting to get a little bit of something going, South Africa, but this will be the ultimate challenge against this England side playing this brand of cricket in England's backyard. It'll be a real challenge for South Africa, but they do have something that's starting to develop their cricket team.
Right, time for free hit. Last week, we gave you guys the opportunity to ask Phil Tufnell anything you want, be it about the world of cricket or beyond. So let's have a few more. We've got several in. The first is from Paul. He asks, given the brilliant run chases made by our England cricket team this summer, do you think other test-playing nations, i.e. Australia, will follow the example set by England, and could this lead to more exciting fist days in the future?
Without a shadow of a doubt, I think the test cricket is going through a bit of a revolution at the moment, and I think that everyone is looking towards England and and going to be trying to play this new game because it's more fun and it's more exciting.
Yeah. Mm. Sort of exciting fourth days. Sometimes the fifth days are sort of dispensed with because the matches are over so quickly.
We might not make it to the fifth day. It's like the fifth blast, we might not make it.
Yeah, I'm going to the fourth day at Lords this year. Well,
get there early.
When is it?
That's a Saturday. It starts on the Wednesday.
Yes, exactly. So the fourth day is a Saturday. So, which I did for the last Lords match, and I only got an hour and a half. So the second question comes from a gentleman who delights in the name of Waspy. Was Lewis Hamilton robbed of the F1 world title last year? Or should we just get over it and move on?
Well, I think the answer to that is that he was slightly robbed of the championship last year, and I think we should get over it and move on. But yes, I think he was. They can't just change the rules at the end, just a race. But but there you go. Not the end.
It felt a bit nobbled for Netflix, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But
it's a good show, though, that Drive to Survive. That is a good show. And by the way, another good show for you guys, All or Nothing Arsenal, fantastic. What I liked about Arteta is when he, and I don't want to give too much away, but he wanted to create Anfield in the training ground, so he put speakers around the training ground with all the Anfield noise. They lost 4-0.
Amazing.
Yeah. What would you like to create? What would you create? There you go. What would you create in the training, you know, in nets?
You could maybe have that soft Lord's burble.
Perhaps the clink of glasses.
The pop of champagne corks.
They just recreate. That's out.
Okay, as you've said it, what is the best sledge you've ever been on the end of, Phil? And then Mike.
Well, my one, I mean, bit of a, you've probably heard it beforehand. I can remember walking out against the late, great Shane Warne, all the Australians round the bat, and I think it might have been one of the guys behind them, might have been Ian Healy even, I'm not quite sure, just as Shane was throwing the board up, he's gone, "Hey, Tuffers, lend us your brain, I'm building an idiot." But that was quite good. But he was correct, because as he said it, I turned round. I'd just like to say that they did finish building the idiot, and they called it David Warner.
Excellent.
Well, Shane Warne was involved in mine as well, and I will not name the batter that was taking guard, but it was an England batter taking guard, not doing so well. And I think it was at the Adelaide Oval in 2002. He's taking guard, and he's kind of middle stump, please, umpire. And Warney from second slip, and he was nervous, kind of shaking away. Just obviously not faced to deliver. Warney goes, "Hey, mate, you got some shit at the end of your bat." And the batter started looking at the bottom of his bat, and he goes, "No, mate, the other end." Not even face the ball, the poor fella. He didn't get too many.
No.
What?
That'll add to your brain. Brilliant, guys. Thank you very much.
See you next week.
Right, that's it for today. A big thank you to Mike and Phil. Huge thanks to Simon Harmer for his time. We look forward to seeing what he can do in the Test Series at the end of the month. Three of us are back next Wednesday, same time, same place. And we are going to be speaking with a very special guest, the one and only Sir Geoffrey Boycott. He will be in with us to discuss his new book, Being Geoffrey Boycott, as well as the new era of England cricket and the future of the game too. There's lots of great stuff on the Forney and Tuffers Cricket Club channel. Check that out in the meantime. There's interviews with the managing director of men's cricket, Rob Key, and last week's chat with Sophia Dunkley too. Thank you for listening to the episode. Make sure you subscribe to stay up to date. Until next week, goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.